Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thanks for tuning into the broadcast. I'm Neil Stavem, along with Ted Ross. And I'm wondering, is it possible that we have overlooked a key opportunity to show the love of Christ in our communities? And it's right before our eyes. In fact, you may drive by it every day, and your kids are likely already connected. We're talking about the local school. And today we're going to hear how one church made a commitment to invest in relationships with their local community schools and what's growing out of that connection. You want to stay tuned for today's lesson on serving local schools. If you want to get the chalkboard ready.
Go back to school.
There'll be a quiz at the end of the hour. So
of course, it's all digital whiteboards now, right?
That's true. Yeah. So there's still going to be a quiz, though. So okay. I want to pay attention. By the way, we're going to talk about a new book that our guest has written called Serving Local Schools, Bringing Christ's Compassion to the Core of Your Community. And we'll get to that in a moment. But speaking of writing, I do want to just mention again that if you have missed it, we've been talking a lot about it, the Northwestern Christian Writers Conference coming up this summer. And it's going to be a great opportunity. If you've ever thought about writing, have a passion to use the written word to communicate the gospel, great opportunity to be a part of this.
That's right. July 15th is a Saturday, so set that day aside, plan to come to the campus of the University of Northwestern St. Paul. Hear from Liz Curtis Higgs, our keynote speaker. She's going to be great.
And some great opportunities to just learn and grow in this whole area. So check it out online, myfaithradio.com. We've got links to information, myfaithradio.com. Let me just introduce my guests. We're going to get to the story, and it's a great story. I know you're going to be encouraged by it. Chuck Bomar is my guest today. He served as a pastor at Cornerstone Church in Simi Valley, California, for a number of years before moving to Portland, Oregon, back about 8-9 years ago or so. And he planted Colossae Church, and out of that church, a total of 3 churches have now been planted. And in addition to embedding into the city through strategic relationships with civic leaders in the school districts, he's authored over 12 small group resources and 9 books. And talking about serving local schools is his latest, and we are looking forward to digging into that. Chuck, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Yeah, thank you. I'm excited to be with you guys this morning.
Want to talk about, the heartbeat of every local community is found in the local schools. In fact, a friend of mine calls the local school the spirit, small s, the community. And maybe just to start out, remind us about the vital part that the school plays in community life. It really is a unifying factor, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think it's a good representation of a lot of different things. Regardless of what community you're in, that community and the diversity of it, whether it be racial or socioeconomic, is represented in the public schools. And so there's really no organization like it, really, in our culture, where the entire socioeconomic spectrum shows up in one place and from that given community. So for me, it's a critical place for the church to engage and to partner with, because if we want to reach into a core of a community, that seems to be one of the best, if I might argue that it is the best way to do that.
Well, let's talk about maybe some reasons why churches aren't involved in their local schools. Do we have some faulty assumptions?
Yeah, I think that the humanity of it is, in the Christian world, we do have some real fears, and historically we've also, in some ways, seen it as the enemy to our faith. We've kind of created these 2 spheres that we're supposed to, hold up against each other. And we'll talk about the local schools not teaching the Bible anymore, and that's how they started, and those kinds of things. And so there's a real fear from a faith perspective that we're going to lose something very dear to us by engaging or sending our kids there. Now, that's not true of every Christian family, but I think it's very real, and it's a very real thing. And so in some ways, we wrongly view it as an enemy to fight against. And that's affected how much we've approached it. There's a lot of fears there.
Tell us a little bit about your story. I mean, did you always have a burden, a concern for local schools? You pastored in California for a while before moving to Oregon. So give us a little bit about your journey.
Yeah, you know, I haven't always thought about the schools as a critical piece to church ministry and Christ's work in the city. I really didn't think about it. Usually it was kind of like, I oversaw student ministries down in Southern California, which was a fifth and sixth grade ministry, junior high, high school, and college. And I kind of viewed my goal as trying to get volunteers in the youth ministry to go and have lunch with high school students. And if we were doing that, it was like a success, you know, to go and be with them. But I really didn't understand the bigger picture of what the schools represented. And I certainly didn't understand how well many of the district employees and the school employees think about caring for people in the community. And that began to change when I was down there and praying through starting a church in Portland. I didn't know anybody in the city other than I knew of two of my wife's old college roommates that lived somewhere in Portland. But my wife and I really felt it was a unique thing, but we really felt like we were supposed to move here and start a church. And as we began to pray about that, for some reason, I found myself praying for a unique relationship with the school district. I didn't have any, like, I couldn't have explained it. I wasn't even write a blog post, much less a book about it. But I really felt like, okay, well, the community is represented there, and I began praying about it. And from that point, I really started to develop more of a heart for the schools. And then when I got on the ground here and started to engage, I realized the beauty of being a part of that. So it's really shaped. And now I can't see doing church ministry in any way apart from partnering with the schools. So it's really come a long way for me.
We're going to dive into some specifics of ways that you can bring Christ's compassion to the core of your community in the moments ahead. We do have some copies, by the way, of Chuck's book to give away as well, and you'll find it a great resource, and hopefully your heart will be stirred during our conversation. Just curious, we're familiar with, we love, you know, the Palau's and have had Kevin and Andrew on the show, and you know you got connected with Kevin and in kind of one of your initial forays into the local school there, but were they already engaged in working in schools, or did it sort of grow together out of your relationship?
Yeah, you know, I don't think formally the Palau's were organizing anything with schools when we came here and started. I think it's kind of working alongside of each other. We're certainly not the only church working with schools today in Portland, that's for sure. So I think it was just an alignment in general. But yeah, it was kind of funny, actually. I'm somewhat embarrassed when I say this, especially to Luis, but I have told him this. When I was in Southern California, Kevin, I got an email from this guy named Kevin Palau, and I had no idea who he was. I had no idea who Luis was. But I was moving to Portland to plant a church. And so when you're doing that, you don't turn down any meetings, you know? So I accepted the invitation to have a lunch when I got here. And then I started to realize, oh, wow, this is kind of a big deal. And I had no idea. I was super thankful he reached out. And that speaks to really Kevin and his I don't know. He's just so gracious. But I've told Luis that story, and I've told it as I've taught at the Luis Palau Chapels as well. So, or their fundraising event. I think I said it there as well. It's just a relationship that developed over time. And I feel like, gosh, we're just really aligned with kind of a kingdom perspective of what's happening in the city, you know.
Well, Portland is certainly a city in need, and really all our cities have needs, and there are committed men and women who are working in the local schools to try and reach those needs, meet those needs, but could use some help and some partnership, and we're going to find out about some ways that the church can step in and serve local schools. That's the title of a new book from Chuck Bomar. Chuck is a pastor, lead pastor at Colossae Church in Portland, Oregon. Colossae is a multi-congregation church, began with a unique vision of developing a strategic relationship with the school district. He's authored several other books. The one we're referencing today is Serving Local Schools, Bring Christ's Compassion to the Core of Your Community. And we're going to find out how that happened for Colossae Church and Chuck and how it's grown, and we'll get some strategic ways which we can do this in our communities. Stick around for more here on Connecting Faith. By the way, do we have some copies of Chuck's book to give away? And we'd love to get one in your hands as you hear the conversation. You sign up for that. We'll do a drawing at the top of the hour. It's 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Back with Chuck Bomar in just a moment. I can't hear, I hear you calling me to raise a banner of love up high in city streets. One hope for all the world to see. Be my banner of love. This love is a burning flame. One voice crying out your name. Now, to effectively reach your community, the body of Christ has to learn that cultivating relationship with school administrators, teachers, and families is no longer optional. That's what Chuck Bomar is suggesting. Is he's written this great resource called Serving Local Schools, Bringing Christ's Compassion to the Core of Your Community. Chuck is lead pastor at Colossae Church in Portland, Oregon. And I don't know how long it's been since, Ted, you and I have been called to the principal's office. I think it's been a while, I'm thinking, but if you get a call to the principal's office, you probably get a little nervous, you think?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. All right.
We have been there.
Chuck, you got a call to, maybe it wasn't the principal, but you got a call to the school office. Just tell us a little bit about how the relationship started with the first school that you're working with.
Yeah, it was actually worse than the principal's office.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you can imagine that. Well, yeah, it actually ended up being better. But, you know, the first thing I did when I got here is I heard that the school district hosted a social services networking meeting. I didn't really know what that was, but I just showed up at it. And what it was is our district, and many districts have this, they have a something like a resource center where all the schools, the counselors, the people that are face-to-face and dealing with the ongoing needs of the community that's represented in the school, the resource center is kind of the go-to place for that. So there's often like a clothing closet or some sort of things like this. And there's a collaboration of social services provided through the school district resource center for families in need. So that's pretty general structure for a district. Well, I went to that social networking deal and got to know some people. And then I realized, wow, I started to become aware of ongoing medical and dental needs. So in the community, and I was hearing this from the resource center, that these families weren't able to get care. So came across a ministry called Compassion Connect, which I actually served on the board of that later for about 4 or 5 years. I write about it in the book as well. But and they were had done a couple of dental and medical clinics. So I went to them and said, what would it look like if we did this? So we figured that out, and we applied to the school, the high school, to utilize the school for this medical and dental clinic, because that was the needs that, immediate needs at least, that we were hearing. Well, our we got denied. And that date that we needed or whatever was denied. Well, we applied again for another date. That was denied. And then we applied for any date in the entire year, Saturday. And that was denied. So I was like, wow, I don't know what else to do here. And about a week or two later, I received a direct email from the superintendent of the school district asking to meet with us. So what ended up happening is we met with the head of HR for the district. And that's why I say it's like the worst in the principal's office. I'm just going, what in the world is going on? I actually reached out to Kevin Palau, and I said, Kevin, you have way more clout in this city. I was very new to the city. Would you join me for this meeting? And he graciously did. And they had no relationship with him directly, but they certainly knew of some of the work the Palaus were doing in the city. And so Kevin joined me for that. And we sat down at that meeting. And it was the HR director and then a woman to his left and a woman to his right. And they just dove right in. The HR director handed it over to the woman on his left. And she just started off. She said, Chuck, so I understand you want to do this clinic, and it's because of your faith that you want to do it. Can you explain that to me? And I just went, wow, here we go. we just dove right in, didn't we? And so that was the initial conversation that I had at the district office, sitting on the far other end of the long conference table from those district employees. So it was a unique situation, to say the least.
Yeah. You ended up, were able to get the clinic in, though, and that became sort of one of the first ways in which you did some outreach, right?
It is. So in that meeting, I explained who I believe Jesus was. You know, and again, this is the HR director, the ultimate church state guy for the school district. I explained who I believe Jesus was and why I thought to be sincere to our faith, we should engage the people in needs in our city. And this was a means by which we were hoping to build a long-term relationship with the district. And I wouldn't apologize. I certainly won't compromise my faith. So I worded it that way, and we left, and Kevin said a few things too. We left, and I go, Kevin, did I just explain the gospel to the head of HR? Did that just really happen? And he says, yeah. And I go, what do you think's going to happen? He goes, I have no idea. Well, it's only God's grace but we got an email following that, and they gave us a date at the high school, and not only that, but they didn't charge us anything. With there's always at least a janitorial fee, but we took over the entire school. They didn't charge us anything, and the school district decided to pay for Spanish-speaking radio advertisement and television advertisement out of a grant they had. And they sent out flyers to every home of families that were registered on the meal plan. So to get on the meal plan means you're at or below the poverty income level. And so they really helped advertise it. And that was a huge catalytic event that really helped us develop a trusting relationship that, wow, there's some common ground that we can stand on between church and state here. And it was a really, really helpful. In fact, we've done it every year since, and our event, our clinic this year is this Saturday coming up. And so that's been an ongoing thing for us. It's been a really huge event for us.
You know, you mentioned, church and state. That's, I guess, an issue that always comes up. Is that really a barrier? How do you, focus on that, working within the framework?
Yeah, I have an entire, that's a huge question, you know, and that's why I actually have an entire chapter on it in the book, because I think there is, I'll bring up fear again, there's real fear, but it's on both sides. The church is afraid of crossing lines or doing something that they can't do. They feel we feel restricted, and so do the employees of the district and the schools. They feel like they can actually lose their job if they promote any religion. Then they are going to. That's against the law. There's laws there, and so there's a misunderstanding of the laws on both sides, which is why I spent a chapter of just clearly, just very simply explaining what the laws are. And the core of what I was trying to communicate in that chapter is, and I do this in a number of ways, but the laws were really designed not to protect schools, but to protect faith. And so there is a lot of freedom there. We have to be shrewd about it, wise, but there is a lot of freedom that fear should not demotivate us from engaging in the schools. And so that chapter, I'm hoping will help people move forward comfortably and boldly, non-apologetically. And I've found that if you are honest about why you're doing what you're doing from a faith perspective ahead of time, it's actually way better received. That you don't leave any room for assumption, but you actually say, I just want you to understand and be forthright with you with why I'm doing this. And then the what is a common ground. We might be doing it for different reasons, but what we want to accomplish is the same thing. And that for me is a huge starting point for any larger organization that's going to try to, like a church that's going to try to partner with the schools. It can be different from individuals, which maybe we can talk about too, but that's a huge barrier that I think can be easily overcome when you understand just the basic laws and what their intents are.
And, you know, we just got about 30 seconds here before the break, but in terms of what we want to accomplish, I mean, are they the same goals? And what do we want to accomplish? Is it just being the hands and feet of Jesus?
I want to further the gospel message. There's no question about that. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. That would be different than the schools, that's for sure. The why behind it is different.
Yeah.
But that's okay. And we'll move forward with that.
Yeah. We're going to talk more about there's a couple of key words that Chuck references in his book, participation and presence. And we'll find out, you know, can we just sort of walk into the school and say, I'm here to help? Or, you know, how do we go about that? We'll talk about some strategies and some steps to take as we talk about bringing Christ's compassion to the core of your community. We're talking serving local schools with Chuck Bomar, lead pastor of Colossae Church in Portland, Oregon. We've got some copies of Chuck's book to give away. You can sign up for that or join in with a question at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Many schools today facing budget crisis, financial shortfalls, or declining enrollment, and school leaders and teachers are more open than ever to partnering with parents, neighbors, and maybe even churches in a sustainable way. And we're talking about it today, how we can serve local schools and bring Christ's compassion to the core of our communities. Chuck Bomar's guest today is lead pastor at Colossae Church in Portland, Oregon. It's a multi-site congregation. It began with a unique vision of developing a strategic relationship with the school district, and the book we're referencing called Serving Local Schools. Chuck, so do we simply, if we're an interested parent, believer, we simply walk in the school and you say, hey, how can I help? Or what would be the best step?
Yeah, we have people doing that all the time. I think this is a little different than we've been talking so far about, like a church as a whole developing a relationship, where if it's a person, just an individual, yes, anybody from the community, especially if you have kids at the school, can just walk in to the front office and say, hey, you know, I live in this community and I was looking to volunteer at the school. They're not expecting you to unleash all of your religious convictions in that moment. You know, sometimes we feel like we have to, otherwise we're unfaithful. But the truth is regardless of what faith that person is, they're not expected to unleash all of their ongoing convictions. And so you can just show up and say, yeah, I live around the corner. I'd like to serve in some way and help maybe once a week or whatever it is. And you could do that in the schools individually, or you can also do that and find out if the district has a formal resource center, which many do. And that is also a place you could just walk in and say the same thing. And so I would strongly encourage that engagement for sure.
Are projects better than programs? You kind of talk about both.
Yeah, I distinguish the difference between projects and programs. A project would be something like, you know, you're going to spread spark dust on the playground at an elementary school. Those kinds of things, I think, are wonderful if they're not viewed as an end goal. So if your end goal is to go and spread bark dust, well, okay, it's gonna end with a meaningless feeling. Yeah, you helped one day, but you're going to keep asking, what is that accomplishing? What are we doing here? And it seems kind of too humanitarian. But if it's viewed as, or merely humanitarian, if it's viewed as a means to a larger end of building a relationship, and it's not just about who you know, it's also about who knows you and what posture they see you taking. And so if it's a means of becoming known as a servant and somebody wants to help, those kinds of things, then yeah, projects are great. Paint the bleachers. We've done that at the high school. Paint the gyms. Redo the floors. Whatever it is, those kinds of things are great as a means to a greater end. And then the programs would be kind of ongoing things. There's all kinds of stories of some people that I know, they've decided to take care of all the band equipment at all of the football games, and that's their ministry. And they do that ongoing. Other people take care of like a certain sport, or there's ongoing projects that people can do on a very real practical, anybody can do them way. And those are all ways in which you can build relationships over time where your faith can become known as well as to why you're doing what you're doing. I would promote and encourage both those programs and projects. But sometimes, I don't know what other questions you have here, but sometimes as strategic as we can get, and I have a whole chapter called Being Strategic, and I think there's importance in that, but sometimes you just can't strategize what God would do. At some point, you have to have God just show up. And one of the things in which I would say is just by being present through programs or projects, but specifically just for people in general, just in ministry in general, being available is perhaps the most effective long term. It's amazing how God connects those dots sometimes.
In fact, I know you tell a story in the book about just a kind of a relationship you ended up developing with a young man who had some drug issues, and there ended up being a school connection. Just share a little bit about that.
Yeah. Somebody just emailed me and was very honest and forthright, and he was struggling with drugs and wanted to meet. And so I did. I met with him for about 4 months, and he was hiding this from his parents, and he was living with him at the time. He was an adult, but living with him, and he was hiding it from him. And so it was this ongoing process of trying to help him overcome the drug, but also be honest and forthright with his parents. And he had already been through rehab and stuff, so he was just a lot of shame, and he was really struggling. And so we met almost weekly for about 4 months. And it was fascinating. I just did that to be present with him as a person. But ended up being that one of his parents worked in the school district, and through a number of circumstances, put the pieces together that I was the one helping their son. And that's what I mean by you can't really strategize or manipulate that. It just, God just shows up in a way and connects dots for you because it's more than a program. It's more than a project. You're just present with people in ministry. And it's amazing when you have that all of a sudden get connected in a way. And I have to say that connection provided some open doors that I don't know would have been open otherwise. We certainly couldn't have forced it.
Yeah. You know, one of the things you talk about is, thanks for sharing that story. You talk about maybe taking some steps to increase your cultural intelligence. And I'm thinking, your kids attend schools in the district, and, you know, they're not always aware of the needs among their classmates, right? And we certainly wouldn't be if we've never really, you know, jumped into the schools.
Right. Yeah, and even if you are in the schools, my kids, my family and I have helped a number of homeless families at my daughter's school or whatever, where the counselor calls us, and we've showed up as a family, and we've realized that one of their children were classmates with one of my girls, and my daughter didn't even know. And so it is hard to see, especially outside of an urban, like a city center context. So in a suburban area, it's hidden oftentimes. You can't see as much. But when you start to see some things, like I've helped my girls see, like, look at your friend's shoes, really super practical things. There's some clues that we can become a little bit more in touch with as to what's actually going on with people so we can serve them. But I counteract that. I don't know if counteract's the right word, Neil, but I also talk about cultural humility in the book. And what I mean by that is not just head knowledge of what's going on, but an inward Christ-like humble posture that we have towards serving. It's one thing to serve somebody because you want to help, and that's awesome. It's another thing to serve somebody because you realize that this is what Christ did, and this, he humbled himself. And for us, I think that there's an important humility part where we approach serving others Christ-like when we realize that we are transformed in that process. So in that sense, we actually need them as well, to be transformed into Christ-likeness. And that's cultural humility is what I'm trying to get at there.
Chuck, talk about maybe some of the projects that you've tried, and of those, what worked and maybe what's not worked well. Give us a few examples. You mentioned the clinic, and you just referred to that you've helped some homeless. But what are some things that work? What things could have worked better?
Well, you know, some things that haven't worked well is when people have gone into a context, a school or whatever, and had an existing project in mind. So in other words, they had an idea that they wanted to do at the school, and they brought it to the school and said, we want to do this. And that often does not go well because it often creates more work for the school. So we learned that early on. So instead of going with a preconceived idea of what the needs are and assuming that we know what's going on, we've switched now to approaching and saying, okay, let's assume we don't know what's going on and let's ask them what their needs are. And then let's find something we can do really, really well. So that's been a learning curve, to not assume we know what's going on. Another thing, assumptions get us in trouble, is when we don't assume, and this is a learning curve for us, is we went in originally kind of assuming, it's really arrogant to say this, and I'm kind of embarrassed by it now, but we kind of didn't assume that people were thinking through things well already. And again, I'm embarrassed to kind of share that and confess that, but what we've realized is that there are some, you know, they're not necessarily Christian, but brilliant people who have a deep heart to care for the kids in the school district and are thinking through things exceptionally well. And that has been a real encouragement now to see and be able to partner with them at a much higher level. So those are a couple of things that we've realized, you know, approach.
Has it had a transformational impact on your church as a whole?
Oh, wow, yes. I'm to say no would be, yeah, negligent on my end. I think any time we seek to further the gospel by engaging those in need in where we live, I mean, God has us where he has us, so we have to assume he wants to use us where he has us. Otherwise, we should probably move. But when we engage in furthering the gospel through what we say and what we do, and particularly with those in need and following Christ's humility in that, you are going to be transformed. There's no question about that. And I would actually argue that without that engagement, specifically with those in poverty, those poor, we actually rob transformation from happening in our own lives. And that's one of the reasons why I would argue strongly that serving local schools is no longer really an option for us as a church. It's a means to a lot of different facets for the goodness of God to be expressed and to be articulated. So.
And as you said, the school represents the entire spectrum of the culture, you know, the economic culture, everything else. It's all there in the schools.
Right. Yeah. And not only that, it not only does it represent kind of a core family structure in a given community, it also represents the future of that community. Those kids will be in the community later. So how they are formed now is going to help form the community long term. And that perspective, I think, is often missed as well.
I want to recommend the book Serving Local Schools, written by Chuck Bomar. The subtitle is Bring Christ's Compassion to the Core of Your Community. It's published by Zondervan. Chuck's lead pastor of Colossae Church. You can find out more about them at colossaechurch.org. They're a multi-site congregation in Portland, Oregon, and Chuck's authored several books. Glad to have him with us today. Chuck, thank you for the good work you're doing, and tell us your story today.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on.
Chuck Bomar joining us today on Connecting Faith. And again, we do have some copies of the book to give away. It'd be great to have you sign up for one and just find out how you might be able to have some impact in your local community. 877-933-2484 is the phone number. If you want to sign up for a copy of Serving Local Schools, 877-93-FAITH. Coming up in a moment, our Wednesday visit with Leith Anderson is just ahead. Being light, talking today about serving local schools. We're always honored every other Wednesday to spend a little time with Leith Anderson, president of the National Association of Evangelicals, longtime pastor, Christian leader, and author. And Leith, we so enjoy the opportunities to connect with you. And I know that the NAE has a number of initiatives they work with. But, you know, our previous guest, he was just talking about the church building relationships with their local neighborhood public schools. And say a little bit more about how, you know, the NAE is encouraging churches across the nation to do that very thing, to really engage and to help invest in local schools.
We are doing that through a partnership with another organization. And the idea, I only heard part of what Chuck had to say, but the idea, as far as we're concerned, is that churches need to be adopting schools, and especially schools where children may be disadvantaged. And I know that many churches, and this is good, they buy supplies and help teachers and repair buildings when budgets are tight, but probably the greatest benefit, at least in our projects, is when churches recruit Christians to mentor and tutor and become friends with children for a long term. It just transforms a child's life to have that kind of a relationship. And, you know, people don't want to make a long-term commitment like that, and I understand that, but when they do it as a team together and they're in the same church, they share the stories, and it's just a wonderful and challenging and really productive thing to do.
It's amazing to see the effect that that can have for so many people. Thanks for joining us again, Leith. You know, this past Sunday, speaking of churches, a lot of them were filled beyond capacity. It seems that Easter, it draws a lot of the crowds in. How do you approach the Easter service as a pastor? How did you do that, knowing that many in the audience would only be coming perhaps for that one time of the year?
Oh, Ted, that is such a good question. And oh, I don't want to disagree with you. Let me just give you another perspective on all of this, okay? And that is that most Christians don't attend their home churches 52 weekends each year. Now, I know you and Neil never miss a 52 consecutive weeks.
That's right. Thank
every
you.
Year.
I'm wearing my star right now.
but most actually, they miss. We miss because of vacations and business trips and staying at seasonal homes and visiting the churches of grandparents and grandchildren, all of that. So in most churches, most people are there 1 out of 2 weeks or 1 out of 3 weeks. So that means a church that averages 100 really has 200 or probably 300 regular attenders. And what happens is that at Christmas time and at Easter time, especially at Easter time, there are no business trips. I was on a plane over Easter weekend. The plane was only half full. People don't take business trips then. That's not when they go to their seasonal cabins. And they all go to church. So the people that are usually there only, you know, every other week or every third week, they all come at the same time. So it's actually when the whole church comes together, throw in an extra 10% for visitors. But at least in my experience and in talking with others, it's not that people are showing up just once a year. Huh. It's just they're all coming at that time. And Ted, just hang in there with me. you know, let me say that the opposite is that they take off on vacations, Memorial Day weekend and 4th of July weekend and Labor Day weekend, and attendance drops. And this isn't just churches. Go to a movie theater or go to a restaurant, especially on a Saturday night, and there's a waiting list and a line. Go Tuesday night, and they'll give you a discount on your dinner. Mm-hmm. So it's cyclical. And I just think of Easter as the time when that's the one weekend or one of the weekends when everybody's there, the whole church family at the same time.
Good perspective, yeah.
So it didn't bother you then? I mean, if people weren't I suppose it was a concern that people weren't maybe as regular as they could be, but did that ever sort of get to you, say, you know, I only see these people once every 3 weeks?
Well, I only talk to you once every
week. Well, sure, yes. And it seems like it's going really well. So, okay.
You know, I mean, it's just the reality that's what lives are, and it's the way that schedules go. But I fully recognize, as a pastor, you celebrate the resurrection of Jesus with the church family. And the next weekend, people really are off on business trips and doing those things because they couldn't do it the week before. So, of course, the attendance is less, but that's okay. That's just a normal part of it. So, no, didn't get depressed.
All right, good. Well, this maybe this next story is kind of it sort of depresses me, I guess. The news has been covering this sad story, the Facebook murder. So many people clicked on to see the video, which is just, you know, kind of disturbing, I guess, that so many people are just attracted to, you know, evil that's so prevalent and so readily available. And just wondering if, you know, is that a cultural reality that we just have to deal with now, that we're just kind of drawn to this darkness?
You're right. That is disturbing. I mean, I can hardly find words not just to talk about it. I can hardly find words to think about it. And as you know, millions around the world went online to watch the murder of an innocent 74-year-old grandfather by an allegedly mentally ill killer who has since taken his own life. So I didn't go on the internet and look it up, but I was watching television news. I didn't know it was coming, and I saw it. So So that's millions more people who saw it on television. And, you know, why do we do that? I think that there's a fascination with violence and evil. It's sort of a way to see something without participating in it. But, you know, it's not new. I mean, in the Bible, there was a crowd that was drawn around the woman who was taken in adultery. In the book of Acts, Acts chapter 7, there's the story of Stephen being stoned. It drew a crowd, people watching somebody being stoned to death, including the young Apostle Paul. So while we have the internet and social media today, we're just kind of doing what – anyway, let's talk about why we do that. And as Christians, we need to be careful that we're not complicit in the victimization of people. It's Jesus' principle that we treat others the way we want others to treat us. And we try to imagine if we were assaulted, if we were brutalized, if we were humiliated or even murdered, would we want other people coming and watching us in that circumstance? I hope not. And that's the way we need to treat other people, as Jesus said, the way, you know, that we would want to be treated.
Yeah, and taking it a step further, too, I heard a friend thinking about this story say, well, we are called to pray for our enemies. And at first for them, they didn't want to do that, but then they did, trying to follow Jesus' command to pray for our enemies. How can we do that honestly for those that perpetrate evil?
Sometimes people say, oh, I pray for my enemies. I pray they'll get sick. I pray they'll lose their job.
Yeah.
Or, you know, their lives will be miserable. And that's obviously what, not what, you know, the Bible has in mind. What that comes down to is really an issue of trust. Do we really trust God that he can accomplish good in the lives of others who are our enemies? And there's significant biblical precedent for that. In Jeremiah 29 is the story where the people are praying and hoping they'll go back to Jerusalem because they've been taken captive and they're in Babylon. And what happens is the prophet Jeremiah gives the word of God, and the word of God is, you stay put and you pray that Babylon will prosper and have peace. These are your enemies, and that you won't go back to Jerusalem. And God says, I will bless you through your blessing them. Well, that takes a lot of faith to pray for your enemy to prosper, trusting that God will use their prosperity for good. So I don't think of it primarily as just, I don't know, praying for our enemy. It's also trusting God for what he can do.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking, too, that there's probably a place where we need to be more engaged in entering into a prayer for those brothers and sisters in Christ that are facing enemies. I guess to think about, you know, ISIS and those in, you know, Syria and Iraq that seem to be particularly targeted.
Well, persecuted Christians are too many around the world, and some would say we are now among the most persecuted people in the world. We're so blessed in America that we don't have to deal with that. That's exactly right, though, Neil. What we need to do is add that to our prayer list each day. And it's in the Middle East, but it's also in places like South Sudan and Nigeria, especially the northern part of Nigeria, other parts of the world where being a Christian makes you a target and the suffering can be indescribable. So, yeah, we need to hold them up and pray that God will work in the lives of their enemies to do what is good and right.
Mm-hmm. Leith, always good to connect with you. Appreciate your insights, your encouragement. And, you know, and getting together every couple of weeks seems to work out fine for me. So hoping
we'll
it's working.
Going.
Yeah, we're not bothered by any more time than that. So.
Right. Make sure you go to church on Sunday.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, we'll be there right up front. Leith Anderson joining us today. He's president of the National Association of Evangelicals and a longtime pastor and author. We always appreciate the opportunity to connect with him here on Connecting Faith. It's a regular every other Wednesday feature. I encourage you to check out our website to find out about all the great resources available online. And if you missed part of today's show, you can catch it there. We post the interviews on the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.